Good afternoon, guys. It is Joe Varnador. Welcome to the Thursday afternoon non-performing loan call. We are privileged today to have Mr. Charles Mangan on the line with us. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Very, very good, my friend. And you?
I'm doing good. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, very good. And then, of course, we have Miss Susan Sooth running the boards today for us and contributing as well. Kevin Shortell is headed up to Cleveland to do a three-day class there this weekend. So, and then Kevin Moore is, I think he's taking a sailboat across Lake Michigan.
On his way. He was in Milwaukee. I talked to him this morning, Joe.
No, did he use, he was going by and look at a few colonial assets there, I think.
He's looking to buy some REOs, so he was out that way looking at some REOs up there.
Yeah, I saw the top 10 list of cities that have the pretty much some of the roughest cities, and I think as far as economic poverty, and Milwaukee was one of those, it was 26% as far as of the people lived in poverty, and then there was a couple of places in California with as many as 40% of the people in one of the towns like Stockton or someplace like that being below the poverty level. So it's kind of crazy. All right, so Susan, let's see. We've got first up we got a question from Sylvia. And if you're doing something there, I can pull Sylvia up on the...
Yeah, I got her. Sylvia, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Joe. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you guys doing?
Very, very good. As Dave Ramsey would say, better than we deserve.
I hear you.
There you go. So, Sylvia, talk to us about what you've got here, and let's go through it.
Well, I was looking at some notes, and I had an opportunity to bid on this one, and I started asking questions. It's kind of third party. Somebody's brokering notes that other people have, whatever, and so, you know, I was really doing a lot of due diligence, and coming to be, you know, the person that's brokering these was telling me that finally got down to the nitty-gritty, and I said, well, what's the deal with these with this note, you know, and coming to be the person that bought it from a hedge fund, he actually has a machine shop, which is his first, you know, what he does mostly, and he bought these notes, and this one in particular, or maybe all of them, just kind of set them aside. He's self-servicing them, and so I said, well, I mean, did the Tillo RESPA letters go out, and he said, well, if they did, you know, I would imagine the hedge fund he bought him from sent out the goodbye letter, but as far as the hello letter, you know, I don't have a clue. So I was just wondering if neither one of them was sent out or one of them wasn't sent out. I mean, what are the, you know, what kind of complications could occur because of that?
These are NPLs, these are non-performing?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, they're non-performing.
Okay, gotcha.
And top it off, they're seconds.
Okay, and when were they originated, do you know?
I think back in, I want to say 07, but I'm not really sure. I didn't look back.
So I'm going to... I'm going to defer then to our resident expert, Carl. Let's talk this through and let's see if we can figure this out.
Well, I kind of agree with you, Sylvia. I'm thinking if he bought them from a hedge fund, at least the hedge fund would have sent out the goodbye letter.
On yeah, that. I think so.
Now then, it's not likely if this guy hasn't been working these notes that he ever sent a goodbye. I mean, a hello letter. You know, what it boils down to, I guess, is that, you know, you want to make sure there is a valid lien, you know, you do your due diligence. This wouldn't stop me from buying a note. I would definitely push back and ask, you know, was a hello letter, goodbye letter sent. I definitely want to get confirmation. I would probably even want to speak with the seller directly. Do you even know when the last contact was that the seller or the note holder tried to make contact with this borrower? Do you know if there was any contact attempts ever made?
Actually, now that you're saying that, the broker did tell me that the borrower had reached out to them and had on one of the notes of this particular note had offered $10,000 to pay off the note, just give him $10,000. The guy didn't take it. So I would imagine he reached out somehow. How did the guy know that the note was bought or sold off? I didn't go further into details to ask to show me copies of the letters, but the broker said was I'm trying to find his note here. He said
these notes were offered for sale by a hedge fund, and then the gentleman that owns these notes is the machine guy that owns the machine shop, and then he's given these to there's somebody that's talked to him, and they have an agreement with the current note owner, that the guy that owns the machine shop, and they're brokering these seconds for a fee. Is that kind of the way the ball rolls there?
Right. There's a broker that's brokering these, and he's reputable. I mean, I've dealt with him before and bought stuff from him in the past, but he's basically kind of the middleman, I guess, and he's telling me that what he said was, I believe that the TIL and RESPO were sent out, but in this case from the seller's entity as self-cert or servicer. So the guy's, never parked him with a servicer. He's just kind of took him, and I guess he must have sent him a letter or tried talking to the guy. But I have no real evidence of the letters going out. And I just thought, I mean, he hasn't really worked them. He said that the guy offered him $10,000 for the note to pay off the note. And
the current lender / note owner $10,000.
Right, to pay off the note, and he had refused to do that. So, but then he didn't work the note, and I said to the guy, well, he should have really just taken the money at the time. I don't know what he bought it for, but
Yeah, I'd probably take the $10,000 and ran, but again,
I'm wondering what he bought.
Hopefully he paid less than that for them, and
I would think so.
Well, so Sylvia, do you have the information on the property? Do you have the address, and do you have the balance on the first?
I have all the information, and there's other issues with it. I mean, it seems like he's got foreclosures, but the borrower has past foreclosures. He doesn't pay, all the time. He seems to have a good job. I mean, he's a supervisor for a construction company, but he just has a lot of bills, and doesn't seem to pay on time. And the first, he's been paying most of them on time, but he was late here recently, so he's like behind. I think it's like $2,000, and I started to see that. But then as we went on, and I was asking more questions, that's when the broker said, well, the story is this guy has not serviced these. And I said, and that's when I asked, well, what about the letters that they go out? And so his answer to me was that he thinks they did, he believes they did, but you know, would the seller would have sent them. But I'm thinking that, you know, the hedge fund must have sent their goodbye letter. I don't know if he sent the hello letter, but just for future reference, you know, I just was wondering, is that something that you should be concerned about, or is could that come back and haunt you? And I say that neither one of them or only one of them was sent. You know, it just seems like this guy doesn't really know what he's doing. Probably shouldn't be buying, especially seconds. Well, but
what I would probably say, Sylvia, is, you know, would it stop us from buying a one-off note? Probably not. We're just going to make sure we send. We're just going to make sure that the if we bought the note that the note holder sends out the goodbye letter, and we would send out our hello letter. You know, we can't always control what's happened in years past. We can only assume that the hedge fund did, which I'm pretty sure the hedge fund would.
Right.
And the guys made contact apparently with this borrower. So there's been some communication there. So he knew who to communicate with. So I don't think, I mean, I would just make sure that if I bought these notes, that I make sure that that seller sends out a goodbye letter. You're probably going to have to provide him one, or the broker's going to have to provide him one, because he's probably not going to have a clue what a goodbye letter is. So, but I would just make sure that I did pick that up and make sure I send out my hello and goodbye. Or my, are you going to service these yourself, self-service these also?
No, I never do. I go with the professional servicer.
Yeah. So, you know, just make sure the seller, so he sends out the goodbye letter, you know, after you've done your due diligence, and, you know, make sure it's a good deal and there's valid lien still in place. I would definitely make sure that they send, and I'd have them provide you a copy of the goodbye letter.
Okay.
And that would be a condition in my contract too, is that the seller has to provide, within the rest of the timelines, the seller has to provide the borrowers with a goodbye letter.
Okay. Okay, but I mean, let's say he never sent any one of the two. Let's say he bought it from another, you know, non-professional person or whatever. Would that be a problem, or is it still, since it's one-off, do the same thing? I'm just, you know, this is the first time I've kind of ran into this, and I just was wondering what the ramifications could be with something like that.
I've never had anyone ever come back. Not saying they couldn't, you know, because I mean, but you know, I've never had anyone, and I have on occasion had servicers or sellers that didn't get the goodbye letters out in the time frame allowed, so they just didn't get out. So, and I've never had anything come back to me on a borrower or seller not getting a or sending or receiving a goodbye letter or a hello letter. I've never had any type of RESPA violations. You know, I mean, it's an exception, not the rule, you know. So just if there's one occasionally, okay, well, then there's one occasionally. But, you know, if I'm buying a note, I'm going to make sure I'm sending out my goodbye letter and hello letters, whatever, you know. So I'm going to make sure it's done when I buy the note. So if they ever came to me and said, okay, there was no RESPA, well, I sent my RESPA that when I bought it, you know. They may go back to the hedge fund, they may go back to the seller. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, what's the likelihood of that happening? Probably slim to none. Very slim. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and that I agree. And I, you know, for those of you that are on the call today that are newer, you know, Sylvia's been around a while, right, Sylvia?
Yes.
and I mean that in the most, you know, the most loving way, Sylvia. You know what I mean? You know,
it's like, I get it.
I ran into, I was at a deal.
As long as you're not asking me now, you know, what my age is. Or
no, I wouldn't want to go there either for myself. But anyway, I think Sylvia would be considered note school royalty, you know, because she's been around since the beginning of all this, I think.
So, nice.
But, you know, one of the things that I always say and you know, you've got to be seasoned to deal in the second space. Would you agree, Charles?
Yes. Yeah, you definitely won't be seasoned in the second space.
And the other thing I try to, and if any of you've seen me at a 90-minute presentation or a full day, one of the things I always qualify is if you don't remember anything else that I say, do remember that if they're not paying, if you're buying a second and they're not paying on the first, then you probably should move on. But in this case, it seems that they're paying very sporadically on the first and certainly not on the second. But I'm sure, Sylvia, that what you've done is you've gone in and you've looked at this and you've looked at the current value, and when you look at if you did have to force an issue and go in and file and, you know, for foreclosure and take over this, that there'd be enough money to back yourself, or enough value there to back yourself out of it.
Right, right. And I also look at the rent, you know, see if they, if you wanted a, you know, contingent on the, or, you know, pay the rent it out or whatever, and pay the first, see if that, those rents would cover that, you know, that the first, the mortgage on the first, or the payment on the first. So, there's a lot of detail to it, but,
You know, there's a few more steps in the second process, but, and you know, when I was in, Charles, when I was at the Distressed Mortgage Expo into January, you know, everybody was complaining that was in the second, buying seconds, that the seconds were as expensive or more expensive than the first for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. Well, they were talking that, you know, they were paying, you know, 45 to 55% of value on the seconds. So that seems, you know, pretty high. And I'm sure Sylvia is paying a whole lot less than that. But the inventory of seconds had dwindled a little bit, and then. The big thing is we're going to see a whole lot more based on what did I read somewhere that there was 2.3 or 2.4 million home equity loans that were originated right at the end of the boom that's set to come due this year.
Okay.
It was like 2.3 million where, you know, and most of those are probably, you know, those people have been paying interest only on these things, and the interest rate was very low, and so when they come due, the 10-year call comes in, they've either got to, you know, either pay it off, or they've got to start making an amortized principal and interest payment at whatever the current rate would be on a second mortgage, right? So they're estimating there's going to be a bunch of seconds around, but, you know, just guys, for our new folks on here today, certainly master the first, buying first before you start looking at buying seconds. Does that make sense? Would you agree with that, Charles?
I agree 100%, Joe.
Okay. Very good. So, Sylvia, what do you think you're going to do?
I have to kind of weigh out the other issues with the note, but I would definitely feel, after talking to you both, you know, that I would feel more comfortable buying it, going in, buying it, you know, with this type of issue, which is just, you know, I'm sure I've probably run into it again. So I definitely appreciate, you know, you letting me know what, you know, I feel a little feel much better, you know, buying something like that.
Just buy it right and call the guy and say, hey, look, I'll take that 10 grand you offered.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. Exactly.
That would be my first thought.
I know. That's what I thought. I said, well, shoot, I can buy it low enough, you know, with all the dings this thing has. So, you know, I'll just contact the guy and say, I'll take the 10,000.
Well, and guys, so for everybody on, for the benefit of everybody on the call, so what that means is Sylvia is buying it for a lot less than $10,000.
Right.
Very good. Well, you know, I have only bought 1 second in my investing, you know, long-term investing, and it was 4 years ago, and the only reason I bought it was because it was, I live in Okeechobee, so it was over in the Port St. Lucie area, so it was only about 40 miles away, and I knew the area and all of that, and it was kind of funny because the borrower had, he was paying on the first, it was in a great area, it was just he was way underwater on the second, so the house was worth about $340. The balance on the first was $300, which he was paying on, and the balance on the second was $100,000, which he wasn't paying on. So I bought the loan for $7,000, which was pretty cheap. I mean, you're buying at 6 or 7% of value, and then, of course, this was back when it was Charles. It was taking 18 months to foreclose in Florida, 12 to 18 months.
Right.
And so we, of course, went through the process, and my servicer went through it and did the contact thing, and the guy wouldn't even speak to us. So about 11 months later, it had gone through the process, and it was ready to, we were ready to move forward with the foreclosure on it, and the guy called, and he said, "I guess I'm going to have to tell the servicer, I'll never forget it, I guess we're going to have to deal with you SOBs." But he used the entire word, right? So anyway, what I ended up doing was I was probably too good to him, but I dropped the UPB from 100 on that second down to 40, and it broke him even, and I think I did it at 6% for 15 years or something like that, and he hadn't missed a payment since. I still own this loan. And it's funny because I looked at it the other day. Well, it's the other day. It's been 4 or 5 months ago. But the house is worth about $420 now. So he's got a bunch of equity in it now. So anyway, right. that's my second story. But that's the only one I've ever bought. So
you're sticking to it.
That's right. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Like a very learned man once told me. So what? All right, Sylvia, thank you so much. And
thank you. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate
you're welcome, Sylvia, anytime.
All right, let's talk about Bill's deal here. If Bill's on the line. Susan? Oh, you're there. Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting him. Hold on.
Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't scroll as fast as I like it to. Bill, are you with me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, my friend. Good to talk to you.
Okay. Great.
All right. So, Bill Tuck, scroll down to his to Bill's question there, Susan, if you can. And talk to us about what you've got here, my friend.
Well, it's basically a situation that I run across from time to time where there's a note with some equity and sometimes some significant equity. And one of the first things I kind of want to ask on one of these things is, well, why is that note available? Anyway, but the other thing is that the main thing is that if I want to make a bid on it, I like to make, I'm going to have to consider going through foreclosure. So I want to figure out what my maximum allowable bid is likely to be based on what is owed. And in a particular case that I'm looking at now, which I just saw the other day, there's a $32,000 unpaid balance, but it has 85 months of back interest, which when I calculate it works out to close to $20,000. Yet after repaired value of the house is probably north of $100,000 based on everything that I can find. So one of the things is I'm going to have to find out is that the first question is that when I go into the bid, I'm going to foreclosure, I should be able to set my bid at the unpaid balance plus the, as the note holder, I could set my bid at the unpaid balance of the note plus the back interest payments, which is close to $20,000. So I should be able to set it at maybe $52,000 as my bid at foreclosure.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. So any of your expenses and interest, you can add that to the UPB or the unpaid balance.
Okay. Now, one of the things is that if I do that, and that means I can actually pay more for the note. And the reason I think that may be important is that the note buyer, I mean the note seller, may know that. And so he, even though the unpaid balance is $32,000, he say, okay, I may want 100% of the note. And go ahead.
Yeah, I wouldn't price it on his payoff. I'd price it on what his UPB is. That's how we price the notes, is we're pricing it off the current UPB.
All right. So, I guess my question was, why? And because I believe that what happens if you go above a UPB, then you're adding extra risk. But what is that risk?
Well, I mean, as long as I would never buy it off of anything other than the UPB, and if I bought it and added the interest back to it, I would. But, you know, there could be risk. There could be, but, you know, they could come back and, you know, the borrower file bankruptcy, you know. And not that this happens often, but, I mean, it does happen. The borrower could file bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy trustee might cram the balance down and not let you collect that interest.
Ah, okay.
That's
not only good information, but that's a good negotiating point, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, we when we buy NPLs, there's always interest that we can add it back to them because they're always 2 years past due or a year past due. But when we're buying them, we buy them strictly off of what the UPB is, not what the payoff or the reinstatement balance is.
Okay. As far as you guys are concerned, the risk is just too high to, for example, the bankruptcy is actually one of the things that I was worried about because the indications are that whoever owns this note is it may be fairly sophisticated because when I go and look out, you know, he has no bankruptcy, no foreclosures, no his property taxes are up to date. And how often do you find a delinquent, very delinquent note where the taxes have been kept up the entire time? That kind of implies that there's a sophisticated borrower or that they maybe know how the system works. And so they know that they can stop a foreclosure by bankruptcy and maybe at least temporarily. And by the way, I did check with a lawyer, which is interesting. I said, okay, if I set it for $32,000, see, now this thing has an ARV of, we think, close to at least $130,000, maybe $150,000. I asked him, well, can I go out and bid, you know, as the note holder, can I go out and bid with the other crowd on the note? He said, yeah. So even if I'm the note holder and if I get outbid, I may be able to outbid myself, you know. That was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you don't ever want to outbid what your payoff is. So keep in mind, if your payoff's $40,000 and you go to a foreclosure sale and somebody bids $40,000 and you bid $45,000, well, I mean, you can still get the property, but the anything over what the payoff amount is would go back to the borrower.
Yeah, but even if I paid $40,000, I'm getting a house that ARV is 150, 40% of ARV. I'll take that.
Right. Yeah, unless the bankruptcy court, you know, something like this, you know, if he got to a foreclosure and there was that much equity in there, I would almost feel like this borrower is going to file a bankruptcy.
Well, the other thing I was thinking of is that, why should he even bother doing that? What he should do is just sell the house, you know.
Right.
And that's sort of one of the reasons, questions I'm asking. Why is it even there? And the last servicer that I'm there's another question in here. There, one of the things I found out, which was also surprising, the last mortgage assignment was to Wells Fargo. And I'm pretty sure Wells Fargo doesn't sell notes out into the wild directly. And so then it was probably sold off to a hedge fund and dribbled down to where one of these online things where I'm looking at it. I lost my train of thought. What was I going to ask? Oh, no, what I was going to ask is, would Wells Fargo, I know it is Wells Fargo because the assignment of mortgage went to Wells Fargo back in 2012. Now, there's nothing after that as far as assignments of mortgage, but would that assignment of mortgage be recorded in the county in which the house is, or in the county in which the note buyer resides?
In the county in which the property is located.
Oh, it would.
Yeah.
So, see, that would imply that Wells Fargo is still the owner of the note. Does that make any sense to you at all?
So, and who's trying to sell it to you?
This is up on one of the websites, the exchanges.
Unless there's some assignments that are not recorded, Bill.
Okay, but
sometimes there could be assignments that are not recorded yet. But generally, your deed, your recordings are always in the county where the property is located.
No, interesting. That means that Wells Fargo, if they didn't record it, that would be kind of strange for them to not record a mortgage assignment, I would think, anyway.
Well, it'd be like Wells Fargo. You're saying that Wells Fargo assignment is recorded, so it's currently in Wells Fargo's name.
Yeah, because originally it was Capital Mortgage was the one who originated it, and there's a assignment of mortgage to Wells Fargo in 2012, and there was also an attempt to foreclose in 2012 since there was a notice of foreclosure or notice of sale, but obviously it never went through because the owners still are the same owners are still there.
Right.
So.
Charles. I ran across one like this in Chicago, and it was the same deal, but Wells Fargo was servicing the loan, and it wasn't, they didn't own it, but this was a deal where the owner of the loan could not be identified, and foreclosure had been started, but dropped two or three times, at the last minute, because at the end of the day, they couldn't identify who was the real owner of the loan, even though Wells Fargo was the servicer on it.
Yeah. But according to public records, and by the way, I double-checked this, and I did the research myself, but then I went ahead and, because couldn't quite make sense of things. I had Pro Title do a title search on it. They found the same thing. The last mortgage assignment was Wells Fargo. So, really weird.
Well, the thing with the bankruptcy as well. I mean, even if they file bankruptcy, then if it's a 7 or a 13, but specifically a 13, obviously the trustee has got to agree that they can afford to make that monthly payment. And if they're not making that monthly payment, obviously they'll file, and that'll be pulled out of that bankruptcy, and you could go in and foreclose anyway. So the stay would be lifted if they were not paying, because typically what I've noticed is the letters will go out and say, you're past due on the on your first mortgage. You've got 45 days to correct that and bring it current. And if not, then we'll, go through the process. We'll lift the stay, and the lender can go ahead and foreclose on the property. So that's just a stopgap. That doesn't mean that it's going to, stop and mess everybody up. It's just a delay tactic is really all it is.
Yeah. I think it's Chapter 7, I think it was really worried about, because they can actually lower the payments, right?
Well, they could do that on a Chapter 13 on a reaffirmation. They can also... it can also reduce the balance. Does that happen often? No, it doesn't. It can't happen. Okay. And
this is in Texas, in particular.
So I don't know how much outstanding debt this man has. I mean, the bankruptcy trustee could come back and say, okay, you need to sell the property so you can pay off your existing creditors with the equity. So I'm just saying it could get tied up in a VK, and if there's equity in it, that trustee could say, no, we're going to sell the property, and or we're going to cram down the balances and sell the property, and this is what's going to go to the creditors.
Okay. Well, I think I've you pretty much answered my question.
Definitely sounds like a good note, but I mean, you know, I'm not saying you couldn't buy it and, you know, at the courthouse for 40 and sell it for 130 and you got a good deal, because it could happen. But, you know, it's there's a lot of things in between that could happen as well.
Yeah, well, that's actually what I was getting at. I was trying to enumerate all the things in between that could happen, because my my evaluation was the same thing. The safe thing to do is make it off UPB. If you want to go higher, in fact, probably there's no point in, well, anyway, if you want to go higher, then that's going to be a riskier move.
Right. Yeah, but any overage would go to the borrower. Of course, that would be, Charles, that would be after any unpaid taxes, but of course, if their taxes are current, but it would also include cost of sale as well, right?
Right.
Right. No, that would actually be, from my standpoint, what the only advantage of doing, of not just waiting, in other words, this thing's eventually going to end up on the courthouse steps anyway, so I can just wait for that and see what, but if I buy the note first, I may be able to buy it at a discount, and then when I go out and bid whatever that I bid for, then, you know, actually I'm paying less because I only, for the first $32,000, I paid less, you know, save me half, 50% of that, and then, so it gives me a little bit of a discount. That's really the only advantage to buying the note first if I'm going to chase it on the, as far as its value is concerned.
Right.
Okay. So we've got a couple of questions here. Ms. Rachel Suttles, hello, Rachel, says, how long can Wells Fargo not record the assignment? Charles, you want to address that?
Well, until the next chain of title changes hands. I mean, you know, it could be 2 years before. I mean, it sounds like the Simon mortgage in this case is in Wells Fargo's. It's been filed. But did Wells Fargo have an assignment of mortgage from them to some other hedge fund or to some other buyer, and they haven't recorded their assignment?
Yeah, see, here's the thing that puzzles me, is that, just in case this is not clear, I'll actually tell you where it is. It's over on Watermark. Okay, how did that get over, how did Wells Fargo get a listing on Watermark? And that doesn't make sense to me. That's why I think there may be a missing mortgage assignment in there.
I think there's an assignment that's out there floating around. If it's on Watermark's site, Bill, I think there's a missing assignment there.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Now I understand that can be cured if there's actually a missing assignment in the chain that can be cured.
I mean, if there's an assignment that can, you know, we want to make sure it's cured, because whoever's assigning it to you from Watermark, I mean, it's Watermark. You know, Watermark may just have these on their site; they don't actually own them. So
right.
But you may find out who the seller is on that note, who's actually the owner of the note. Is it, in fact, Wells Fargo?
Right.
Yeah.
And you can certainly go to the question queue there on Watermark's site and ask that question.
Okay. Yeah, I think I will. Well, by the way, I'm pretty sure Watermark owns some of their notes, but they don't own all of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
Okay. So, yeah, okay.
All right.
Weird one.
Thanks, Bill. And then Alan Stratton says, if the value exceeds the secured debt, there would not be a cram down, correct? Charles?
If the value exceeds the secured debt,
there would not be a cram down. And is that correct?
We're talking about the secured debt only?
Yes.
That I'd have to confirm that, Joe.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if the value, because what would happen, is, like I said, if somebody bid $50,000 on this and the balance was $32,000, the unpaid balance was $32,000, then obviously it's going to go to it'll go to pay off any other debtors there that's behind that first. You know, cost of sale, any unpaid taxes. Then if there was a second lien holder, it would go there. And then if there was some other, you know, recorded lien, it would go there. And then if there was any money left, it would go to the borrower, right?
Yeah, the just to clarify on this particular note, neither I nor ProTitle found any other liens other than the primary.
There you go. Well, I would certainly ask some questions of the folks at Watermark. I just go into their question queue and say, hey, I got a question on this. And there's a number there, too. I think you can call them and look at them.
Yeah, I think I'll do that. I was just wondering if I don't want to go over my time here. Are we good on time?
Yeah, we're good. Go ahead.
Okay. Back to what I was saying, it's a more general question, is the business of this happens actually a lot in general, is that I want to know exactly how tight I am. So that implies I want to know how much the delinquency is that I can add to just the UPB. Now, you said only do it to UPB. And my inclination is to follow that, except maybe if there's higher value, is to maybe, you know, be willing to bump it up a little bit anyway.
So here's the thing. You're different than a typical than Wells Fargo would be. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, but you know, once it hits that magic number, whatever minimum bid is, then it's going to sell.
Because
they don't want the property. The lender doesn't want the property, no matter what. Right, Charles?
Exactly right. Yeah.
But you as an investor / new lender, if you can get the property for $40,000 and it's worth $150,000, because you want the property. You don't want just the payoff, which a lender would want. You want the property. So yeah. I guess in that case, Charles, he could, you know, and if there's really truly that much, you know, if there's $110,000 in equity between $40,000 and $150,000, then, and you wanted the property, then
right.
You'd bid more, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's context at which you would have to look at that in, Bill.
Right, but again, I'm back off that particular one. I'm thinking more in terms of in general. I was thinking about when you go through the foreclosure process, do you have to demonstrate when you put your bid in? Do you have to demonstrate that you owe all those? That they actually owe all the. In other words, you have to show a listing of the legal fees, a listing of the any other type of fees, a listing of the back insurance, and that's.
You're going to have a payoff figure. You're going to have to break it down. What's your principal? What's interest? What's legal fee?
Right.
If that borrower was to contest that foreclosure, you'd have to provide that to them. You definitely want to make sure you don't just throw, I mowed my yard, I'm going to charge him for it, or something like that. You got to make sure it's got to be legitimate charges.
Right.
Because they could contest it, and you might be asked to provide a copy of the payoff and what it consisted of.
Okay, now the payoff is provided by who, the servicer?
The servicer, yes.
Okay, now back to occasionally there's notes out there with no servicer, so what happens then? Is it your out of luck?
To make sure you're calculating the right fees, the right interest. So
I'm sorry, what?
It would be your responsibility to make sure that you're calculating the interest, that you've got an amortization schedule, that you can show what the past due interest is.
I see.
And
okay.
And you would provide that to the sheriff or to the foreclosure attorney. The foreclosure attorney is who's going to, you might have to provide that information to in the breakdown.
So then I would have to get from the previous, from the owner, or the previous owner of the note, would be the last date that they paid. Or they're paid to,
right?
And then of course
they might provide all that information to your servicer. you know, last paid, next due, you know, any of that information that they have in there, you know, they're going to provide that because the servicers require a lot of information to board
it. Yeah, and one of the if we had a situation like the previous, like Sylvia's, where the guy probably doesn't have any of this, I'm just out of luck. I'm not going to be able to justify any back charges, right?
Right, and there's another thing when you talk about back charges. So, you know, a lot of times we'll buy notes, and there may be a negative escrow account of $10,000. I had one today that had $18,000 negative escrow account. And so, you know, a negative escrow account, you can collect it, but you've got to be able to prove what that negative balance consists of. And so a lot of these prior servicers, that could have been escrow being, you know, a negative escrow over a period of several years and two or three servicers ago. So, yeah. And if you can't prove what that negative escrow balance consists of, you can't collect it. In most cases,
so when I put all this stuff in my servicer, they will get all this information, right?
Right.
And they will know at the time that we close and we get it boarded, how much they can prove, and, you know, if maybe there was some gap in the servicing or something like that.
Right. And you're saying it's being serviced by Wells Fargo. So, you know, the good thing is Wells Fargo or whoever the servicer is for Wells Fargo will be able to provide your servicer all the information they need to board that asset.
Okay. I don't know that it's being serviced by Wells Fargo. I'm
somebody.
All I know is that they're the last ones who have the assignment of mortgage.
Well, I definitely ask who it's being serviced by, you know, because okay. You are going to provide this information to your servicer when you board.
Have you seen the collateral file, Bill?
Not yet. I'm waiting to since there's only a week or maybe 10 days before the time you make a bid and the time you get the collateral file. I want to have all my ducks in a row to make sure what I'm looking for when that happens.
Now, is this a deed of trust or is it a mortgage and note?
I believe it's a deed and trust.
Okay, so that's non-judicial. So, Charles, that's a easier process as well.
Well, did you say it was in Texas, Bill?
Yes, it is in Texas.
Real easy process. So. I mean, once it's 120 days past due, it's a pretty simple process in Texas. So,
yeah okay, which deepens the mystery.
Acceleration and it's yours. So it's a very short process.
Yeah, so, just the weirdness of this. I mean, they stopped paying in 2010. That's the last paid date that they have listed. So why hasn't it been foreclosed on? I have no idea. That's what I keep looking for. You know, where's the razor blade in the candy?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not always unnormal or unusual. I mean.
Okay.
Well, yeah, weird things happen. You know, it's like one time I found a bunch of razor blades with apples in them.
I see.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So if it's a deed of trust, and you know, I know that last year. Typically, Watermark would go ahead and send you the collateral file immediately. So even before the collateral file was there. So I don't know if you're on their website or you're getting a tape spreadsheet from them to find this asset. But they used to be very good about providing that stuff pretty quick.
Well, I'll ask them.
Yeah. So ask them and see. But if it's a deed of trust, I mean, in Texas. I mean, it's, you know, they signed the power of sale clause when was this originated?
Are we talking about the originated note or the modification?
When was the note? When was it created? When did this?
2003, I think it was.
Okay, there you go. So yeah, if it's probably a deed of trust, and it is. That's a pretty easy process. So I mean, it wouldn't take long to foreclose on it.
Yeah. Now, that wasn't what I was worried about. I was wondering about how do I get to the point of foreclosure? How do I get the note? Is what I'm really.
Right. Exactly.
And what am I buying when I do that?
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. You guys have been real help.
Very good. Okay, guys. So we've got a few minutes before the end of the call here. We've got some some experts, and I mean Charles, on the line here today. So if you guys have a question, certainly certainly fire it out there. If not, Charles, anything that you've noticed out there or any good word you can provide to everybody on the call today? If there is, certainly, you know, share that with us.
You know, Joe, not right offhand. I'm trying to think. It's just kind of business as usual around here.
Yeah, and I would. I noticed that, of course, there's still, you know, Fannie is still selling and Freddie's still selling, so inventory is still out there, and you know, it's certainly, you know, business as usual, as you said. Susan, is there anything you need to add as far as bringing us up to date on anything that, as far as housekeeping items and so on? You can certainly bring those up. And I know that we're looking at Summer Summit, and that'll be a...
Not Summer Summit, Note Expo.
Oh, Joe, yes. Just got through Summer Summit. Let's go. Yeah. Let's move to the next one.
isn't this the end of 1st of May?
No.
Where did the month go?
We have a question that popped on the board from Michael Rogers.
Oh, no, we don't answer questions from Michael Rogers. I'm kidding. I love you, Michael. Okay, I have an NPL in Alabama. I'm trying to understand the typical foreclosure costs for a land contract. The servicer is asking for $3,000 in legal fees. Charles?
Well, and again, it's, you know, I'd have to go back, Michael, and I'm not sure if we have a schedule on our website. Typically, I mean, we try to work by what Fannie Mae allowables are. You know, Fannie Mae allows every state a servicer in every state a certain amount to foreclose on. Is the property vacant or is it occupied, Michael?
You want to unmute Michael there,
sure.
Susan? Yeah, go ahead.
Cool, Michael. Michael?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay,
hey, Michael. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Yeah, it's occupied, Charles. It was a sub-performing note, but I think the borrower just kind of gave up and just quit and stopped paying. So we've already tried to serve him once. With the sheriff has tried to serve him notice, and he wasn't there. So we're going again, and the servicer's telling me, you know, we're going to need $2,500 up front. They've already billed me $1,000. And I'm thinking, hold on, Alabama, this is a land contract. So and they're saying it's going to take 3 to 6 months.
Well, the time frame, 3 to 6 months, that's right. But what we need to find out is, does this servicer's attorney understand land contracts, and can they terminate this land contract? Maybe harder because it is occupied. Generally, terminations are a lot easier to do and are done on non-owner occupied or vacant properties. So once they vacate the property. But, you know, you're probably, $3,000 seems a little steep for a land contract termination or foreclosure in Alabama.
Yeah, it does.
I would make sure that they know that it is a land contract, because typically in Alabama, depending on whether it's a deed of trust, I mean, 60 days will get it done. And if you know, the other question would be, and I correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, but based on, you know, what's the property worth and how much do they owe on it? So if there's no equitable interest in it, it should be an easier process. It should be that easy termination of land contract, right?
Right. And Michael, I'd ask for a fee schedule from this attorney. Attorneys are notorious for saying, okay, I need $2,500 up front. You know, and then when they spend all your $2,500, which they come back and say, okay, we need another $1,500. Well, I don't know what you spent the first $2,500 on. They really don't do the a la carte, okay, we're going to send the demand letter of $200, this, and this. They want a percentage of it up front, a big percentage of it, so they don't have to keep billing. So But I generally will ask for a fee schedule. And, you know, and I've gotten some states I will, you know, I've sent my attorneys that I've used in the past that I know are reasonable. I've used them, and I'll tell the servicer I want to use this attorney to foreclose. So, you know, you can pick up a phone and call up an Alabama foreclosure attorney and say, hey, look, what's the average cost to do a termination or a foreclosure on the land contract? And stipulate if it's recorded or unrecorded. And make sure they understand what the land contract is first. I mean, you can always refer an attorney to your servicer and see if they'll use that attorney. I do it all the time.
That's exactly what I would do, Michael.
Well, that's probably where I kind of screwed up, because I'm working with the servicer.
They've already paid them $1,000.
Right. So the servicer's already paid the attorney, and I have no idea who the attorney is yet. So now I'm being told we need another $2,500 because the attorney's going to be doing it. I'm like, well, hold on a minute. Hold on, Cowboys.
Yeah, we need to find out where he's at in the process and to give you a breakdown. You need a breakdown of what it's going to cost you, you know, from here on out. You want to find your own attorney before you start it with the servicer, before the servicer initiates it, because now if you switch it, you're out of pocket $1,000 now.
Right. So this is all lessons learned. I'm experimenting with the servicer to let the servicer do this, and I'm quickly realizing I'm never going to let the servicer do this again. I'm going to take it over and manage.
And I'm not saying this, the servicers, you know, the servicers use these big network attorneys. And I'm not saying that they're bad attorneys. They're not. But some of them are a little more expensive than they should be. And as a matter of fact, I had three or four states that I referred attorneys to the servicers just here in the last few weeks saying, hey, look, this company, I need this firm to handle all my Ohio foreclosures or wherever. Because, you know, I talked with them, and, you know, the biggest thing is to make sure they understand the land contract. Because if they don't understand a land contract – and they could do a termination, if they don't understand it, they're just going to go through a foreclosure process. They don't even know what a termination is. So you got to make sure they understand what a termination or how to foreclose on a land contract in that state.
Right. I will follow up on all of this.
That's right. So you can certainly do that and take it upon yourself, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I will. This is
very good question, Michael. I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm glad Joe let you talk.
Well, I know Michael has no problem doing that. He's like me. So, and one final question there looks like from Dr. Bob Bullinger. Hey, Bob, any Dodd-Frank changes? And Charles, I would say that we should hear more after the fly-in, which is less than a month away now?
Yeah. About 2.5-3 weeks, but yeah, there's not been really any announcements yet to any changes in Dodd-Frank, but we watch it daily. So if we hear of any major changes, and I think we will hear some changes here before long, Bob, but as of right now, we haven't gotten a lot of changes.
So we should get a big update here after Eddie and all the and Bob and everybody gets back. Are you going, Charles, to the fly-in, by the way?
I'm not. I'm actually going to go to another conference, so no, I will not be going.
So we'll have a good update, and I know there's a lot of folks going, and we're going to have a lot of representation there. So there'll be some reports here by the end of July anyway. So, all right, guys. Bob also wanted us to mention Bob Repass. Is it the 4th and 5th? We're not going to have. Will there be a Monday night call? I don't think there'll be a 3rd or 4th. Will there?
No, 3rd or 4th. Nope.
Okay. So Monday is the 3rd, Tuesday is the 4th. So, but there will be a call on the 5th, Susan.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, we're back on the 5th.
Oh, very good. So that's only a couple of weeks away. So, but there the Monday and Tuesday for the 3rd and the 4th for that. And any of you that's going to be in the LA area, I will be doing a full day class there in Los Angeles on the 8th, I believe. So. And then Eddie's actually up in, any of you that are from the Northwest, I think he's in Seattle tonight. And then he's doing a full-day deal with Quest on Saturday there. So anyway, guys, we appreciate it. Anything else, Susan?
No, just the Node Expo and our upcoming classes and titanium visits.
Pretty good. But
nothing new.
All right. So, guys, we appreciate you being on today. Susan, thank you so much. Charles, thank you for spending some time with us today. And it's always educational. And thanks, guys. And we'll talk to you very soon. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye-bye.